We had the second USO building in the country. I think maybe I told you that before. And it burned in 1995. It will be ready supposedly the 1st of August. I don't think it's going to be, but we hope to have our anniversary there. We have, wow. In fact, the city's going to let us have it free of charge.
Wow.
And because we have kept up the shrubbery and the things at that building ever since it was built. And it was built before the war broke out. Wow. They had already started it.
Wow.
Betty Davis started the whole thing in Hollywood, you know that. Hollywood Canteen. In fact, I'm just reading a book on about her. And
So after he comes home from the Coast Guard and get and is that
he got hurt. The barge they took our boats and converted them into what they call YP boats. That was yacht patrol. They took yacht patrol. And that they patrolled up and down the coast looking for U-boats and to be available when one, the boats that were blown up. That was the most horrible thing that we had to put up with when I was working at the hospital. I don't care where we were, we would hear the explosion, and all you had to do was look out and you'd see the flames and the smoke going up and you'd know.
Right.
Another U-boat has got one of our boats, and so we would, those of us nurses, we'd run home, get on clothes, our uniform, and make a beeline for the hospital. And words will not describe how horrible, how badly they were burnt. And you see, in those days, we really didn't know how to treat burns like we do now. There were no burn centers, no doctors that specialized in it. And we had very few doctors, but they did an absolute fantastic job. And we helped, and a lot of times we were just morale for them, try to keep them their morale up. They were hurt so badly, and of course, some of them died.
Sure.
And we cried, and it was sad. Then their families had to be notified. And so, as I said, I have led a very interesting life.
Yeah, I'll say.
And when I was 55, just before 55, I took another course just to see the difference.
Uh-huh.
And wasn't much. And I worked just a little bit, but I didn't do any floor work because I had had surgery on my left foot. I had broken it and I had to finally have surgery, and I was limping, but they took me anyway. But I did do some private duty at night when they needed it, but I didn't walk the floors and I couldn't. But anyway, then later on, Southport had the first EMT course in Brunswick County. And I was in that. I worked on a rescue squad about 6 years.
Wow.
And that was grueling work. And I have a scanner that I bought then, and I've still got it, and it is never turned off.
Okay.
And every night, during the night, if that tone comes on, it wakes me up.
Wow.
That's funny, after all these years, that it still wakes me up. You're talking about Southport at that time. We were small. We had a bank. I think it was called Bank of Southport or something. It evolved into Waccamaw Bank and Trust, and then United Carolina Bank, and now it's BB&T. I don't know what that stands for, something in trust, banking in trust. But it's still my bank. I've been with...
Sure.
The first one when we were married in 1941. I have never left the bank. I don't care what company they sell out or whatever. I stay
with
them.
You're sticking
with them. Yeah, I'm still with them.
What was the shrimping business like?
Fantastic. Let's see now how I can get back into the way. Dallas drove a shrimp truck for years. He started out driving for his father, and then he began driving for other people.
Uh-huh.
And he was just gone an enormous amount of time.
He'd drive from here to?
From to Fulton Fish Market in New York.
Wow.
And there were always two on the truck. And this is a nice little story. There was a place in Virginia, just across the Virginia line. It was a truck stop. I know one time I was given a review, and I said a filling station, and then later I had to call, and I said, it wasn't a filling station, it was a truck stop. They had food and, of course, diesel fuel for the trucks, and they had a bulletin board. And if you had a message, if Dallas had a message from, we had to keep up with the market, the price, and that's how we paid our men was what we got in New York.
Fine.
So we were in constant, by telephone, we were in, and telephone, wires, telegrams. They were a big thing. I have stacks of them upstairs that are really, boy, do I ever wonder. But these things come to me.
Sure.
I'm sure you are not aware of it, but long years ago when we still had a depot, that's where the telegraph station was.
Okay.
You could send a telegram for 25 cents if you didn't use over 10 words.
Wow. So you got good at it.
Okay.
Being short.
There was another thing. You could send one for about 25 cents if you mentioned the weather. So I have some up there that say, take shrimp to such and such in Baltimore. Weather fine. It could be snowing, but the weather was fine.
Right.
And that's a little thing that you don't see now, but it happened then, and it was just great. We didn't think anything of it. That was just great. That was normal.
Uh-huh.
Of course, if you threw something at people today, they'd think you were crazy.
They sure would.
If you did that. But that just shows you how much this world, this country has changed. In fact, the whole world.
Sure.
It's so modern now, and I'm so bored with it. I hate a computer and HMOs. I said, I don't know which is going to be the end of the world first.
I agree.
An HMO or a computer, and I have decided it's going to be a computer.
Mm-hmm. Well, what happened? So he was in the shrimp trucking business.
All right, he was in the shrimp trucking business. And so we were going together, and he said, I'll tell you when we're going to get married. He had bought me a ring, and there's a little story behind that. Everybody always said, you know, shrimp heads are not worth anything. They just went overboard. And they were actually, the only thing got them was crabs.
Right.
And he was working down in, I think, Rockville, South Carolina. And he found a place, I don't know how far it was from Rockville, because I stayed there one time. In fact, right after we got married. And that was about 20 miles south of Charleston. He found some place that wanted shrimp heads for crab bait. So he had a little a truck-like thing that he could pull behind his car, station wagon. And so every night, instead of letting the shrimp heads, go overboard, he told them, let them go on the floor. So he would stay and sweep them all up and put them in shrimp boxes, fill that up, and truck them. Take them wherever this place was.
Right.
I do not recall the name of the place because I really did not know that that's what he was doing. But he was doing that and was saving all that money to pay for my ring.
So shrimp heads bought your
ring.
Mm-hmm. That's a
when
good
he
story.
Got enough, we ordered it. From a place in New York, we used to get everybody in everywhere, got a catalog from L&C Mail or LC Mail, I can't remember. Somewhere upstairs I've got it, but we picked it out, a picture, and what we could afford, what he had saved, and ordered it. Well, now, he was gone all the time, so we had my neighbor right in back of me, one of my neighbors, worked in the post office, Miss Edna Bell. And I told Miss Edna that I was looking for a package for if we had it mailed to me, because we didn't know when Dallas would be here. And so she was aware of what was going on. And I would go to the post office every day, and she would just shake her head. And I'd know, I didn't come today. But I was in Sunday school one morning, and that was when post offices stayed open on Sunday half day. I bet you didn't know that.
I didn't know that.
Well, they did here anyway. So one Sunday, I was in Sunday school, and one of my friends came in a little late, and she said, Leela, she said, I stopped at the post office, and Miss Edna said to tell you to come to the back door. Well, I knew what it was, so I ran just as fast as I could to the post office, which was only a couple of blocks from my church. And she was standing at the door and handed me this package, and I opened it, and I showed it to her.
That's great.
And I said, Miss Edna, I'm an engaged woman. And now, that's just the kind, and she was just as thrilled over to send me a message in that. Yeah. Now, she couldn't, as legally, she could not take that.
Of course
not. Okay. She lived right there next to me, you might say, but she couldn't do that. She couldn't take it home, and she knew it was Sunday, and it wouldn't be open the rest of the day. But that, bless her heart, she was kind enough to send me a message.
Well, tell me more about the shrimp business. After
Dallas and I got the ring, I practically wore it out. I've still got it on my finger, but I wore that ring 5 years almost before we got married. He worked for another man who came from Fernandina Beach, Florida, and married my very best friend, Dorothy Hardy. Dorothy Dozier, she was. She only lived two blocks from where I did, up on Atlantic Avenue. And he came up here with his boats. He had a fleet of boats, and he came to Southport because Southport used to be known as the shrimp capital of the world. We produced more shrimp in Southport than anywhere in the world. And on just at the nick of time, just during Depression, it started, and couldn't have happened at a better time, and of course ran through the war, but now the war did slow it down because we couldn't get out as good because of the U-boats and the YP boats that I was telling you about. They'd board you and check, it was a mess, but we all survived it, and we won the war. But Dallas eventually went to work for Lewis Hardy running his business. Now, he had a shrimp house here in Southport, but he also, when they discovered the pink gold shrimp in Morgan City, Louisiana, that is the first place in the country they first found those pink gold shrimp. Do you know what I'm talking about? Okay. Shrimp are gray looking.
Right.
But down there, when you catch them, they are pink. And they immediately named them pink gold because they were quite abundant. Unfortunately, I am allergic to them. They have too much iodine in them, and I can't eat them. I found that out the hard way. But
just the pink gold.
It was so important that Reader's Digest had a long, I don't know how many pages, full of this marvelous thing that's happened in the Gulf of Mexico. They have suddenly discovered a different species of shrimp, and they have been dubbed pink gold. So Lewis took his fleet of boats and went to Morgan City and took his family, which is 1,000 miles. It's 100 miles west of New Orleans. I couldn't help but laugh about, I heard two yachts going south for the winter. No, going north, excuse me. Going north for the summer. And they were talking, and one man said to the other, said, well, my wife and I made a trip. We're going to take another just like it this year. He said, we go through somewhere around Chicago and get to the Mississippi. And we went all the way down the Mississippi River and said, and he explained where they had to turn, make a right turn, and he did not say starboard, he said right. he said, you make a right turn on some little creek-like thing, and you'll run into a river, and I can't possibly tell you how he pronounced Atchafalaya. Well, I knew the word because it was Morgan City, and the river there is called, it's Cajun, it's Atchafalaya. I know exactly how to spell it. Well, I just burst into laughter when I heard him trying to pronounce it, and this man said, how do you spell it? And he said, if I know how. He says, but it's a chop or whatever, he said. But he said, well, I'm going to write down what it sounds like. He said, because it sounds like something my wife and I would like to do. He said, you will love it. And I thought, yeah, you will. But Lewis, I can tell you all about it. But anyway.
So Lewis moved down there and left your husband.
Huh?
So this man moved down to Morgan City.
Morgan City. So when we got married, we didn't tell Dorothy and Lewis. We had some, they knew it in Southport. But we went to Morgan City without telling them. Uh-huh. And, of course, they knew how long we'd been going together and all that. But we drove up, and I had kept on what I was married in. Because I wanted Dorothy and Augusta, who lives across the street, or did move, live it. She's dead now. But our husband, I saw, just drove in. They live right next door to each other in Morgan City. And Dallas knew it because he had been trucking out of there. And so he went right straight to their house. And it was pouring rain. And if you have never been in Louisiana when it rains, you don't know what rain is. In 2 minutes, you're up to your ankles in the water. It doesn't have anywhere to go. It's below sea level.
Wow.
You know the levees and all that. We couldn't get out the car, so we just blew the horn. And Dorothy came running out on the porch, and she was eating a bowl of ice cream, and she started screaming, Augusta, Augusta, Dorothy, Leland, Dallas are here. They're married, they're married. We could hear all this, but we couldn't get out. I don't know how long we sat in that car before we got in the house, but anyway. We stayed with them, and Dallas and Lewis formed a business together. Now, the reason Dallas was still working for him was the boats from Carteret County came to Southport every September when the shrimp season started. There was a season, definitely. It's not that way anymore. You never know when they're going to show up now, but you did. I don't know why.
Right.
But I guess the environment has something to do with it, but... You always made it your business to be in Southport in September with your shrimp boats. And so all of the boats, and if I was upstairs, I could show you a picture of a dock that is loaded with those beautiful little white shrimp boats that came from Carteret County. They came to Southport every year.
And they were nice boats.
And they were perfectly beautiful, most of them built on Harkness Island. And, I do know that one of the men that, on the Coast Guard, at the Coast Guard station, Ida Gaskell, he married a Southport girl, and he still lives here. He has a little boat, and guess what it's named? The Down Homer. Isn't that appropriate? Because he still says hoi-toid.
Yeah, I bet he does.
Now, Dallas lost most of that, but I could still hear it a little bit. But I didn't notice it as much as strangers did. Because I started the shell shop down there in 1977 after we sold our last boat. Dallas's health got bad. And so many people would come in and begin talking to him. And many times people would say, sir, did you ever live in England? Because, of course, that brogue is the nearest thing to Old English that you can get except over in England. And it really is, but it was surprising how many people caught that accent.
Sure.
But every time Dallas would say, I'm going upstairs, I'd say, are you going upstairs to come me higher? But I got used to it. But he did go, he got out of a lot of it. But you just let those down-home boats come to Southport, or even come in and say, Dallas, can I tie up here overnight? We're on our way home, you know.
Uh-huh.
He'd stay down there half the night talking with them because he grew up with them.
Sure.
Well, honey, let me tell you, when he came home, he talked just like they did.
I bet he did.
After all those years, the minute he was around them, it all came back to him. And it was a day or two before he'd get back down to Southport talking. But we used to laugh about that.
So they'd all come in here in September. The boats would be all out here. And Dallas had it had his first little fish house.
Yeah, we had it down on the. We bought one down on the waterfront where you haven't been there and you need to go. Waterfront Park now it is, but I can show you pictures of it. And that was the first shrimp house that went in Hurricane Hazel.
Now say I didn't know anything about any of this, that I wasn't from Carteret County, I don't know anything about. Just tell us for the record what happens at a shrimp house. Just pretend I don't know. I'm from New York.
All right, what happened to the shrimp house?
Tell me what happens at a French. Tell me how what happens at a shrimp house.
At the shrimp house?
Yes, like what. Pretend I don't know. I'm from.
You don't know anything about the shrimp business.
And tell me what happened.
I've got all that written down too.
Tell me just how it.
Okay, the boats would come in. Now, for many years we had no contact. They couldn't talk to each other. They couldn't talk to us because there were no radio contact. Uh-huh. Then we came out. They came out with the Halicrafter. Came out with the ship to shore.
Sure.
You remember that? Yeah. You may not remember it, but you know what I'm talking about.
Sure.
And so we got one in our office, but not there, but we had one down there, I think. And so we could pretty well keep up with what was going on, and they could easily out there. They could talk to each other. And there really wasn't a whole lot of competition. It was just, for one thing, they had a net. If you don't know anything about a shrimp boat, they had a small net that was called a tri-net.
Uh-huh.
Now, they put that over. That was just a small net.
Uh-huh.
And they would drag, and then they'd bring it in and count the shrimp. And if there were enough, then they'd drop the big ones over.
The trawl.
And if there were not enough, they'd keep going and keep trying. And that was the main thing they talked about. They'd say, how many did you get? You know, one boat would call the other one. What was that try?
Uh-huh.
And they'd say, well, you think we're safe to put them out?
Right.
And they either said no or they'd say yes. And that's the way they tracked down where the shrimp were out there.
And what kind of boats were these?
These were 45 to 55 to maybe 60 feet long.
Now, trawlers?
And about 18 feet wide.
Trawlers?
Yeah, trawlers.
And
now, they started out much smaller than that, the earlier ones. Long years ago, when I was just a child, they were much smaller.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, as it went on, they got bigger and bigger and bigger until now they are just super trawlers.
And they were wooden?
Uh-huh.
They're wood?
Now they have steel. They've got all kinds.
Right.
I've been out of it so long, I can't talk about the new stuff.
Where were they built in those days?
Most of them in Florida.
Okay.
We did have a few local people. Herman Sellers built some, and there was some. There was a boat works down here at Holden's Beach. I don't remember the name of it, and Fulford's were the people.
Oh, okay.
They built nice boats, and I guess they still do, as a matter of fact. It was a good business, and they not only built them, they had a railway. Of course, they had to have the railway to get the boats overboard.
Right.
And we used to drive down there, and we knew them all and talked with them. And watched what they were doing. We knew which boat they were building and who for whom they were building it. And we kept up with it. And then somebody put up a really nice railway that they could pull our boats out. That was always a problem. If anything happened to the bottom of the boat or the prop needed changing, there's a place up the river here. Willis's Marina it is now. In fact, it always has been as long as I can remember. We would wait till high tide, and take the boat, if it had to be towed, we'd take it around there and take it up as high as we could and anchor it.
Uh-huh.
And then let the tide go out and leave it high and dry. That was our railway.
That was it.
So while the tide was low, then all the men went down and changed the prop or did whatever had to be done. And they even copper painted them.
Wow.
And sometimes you'd have to wait for a couple of tides to finish painting.
Uh-huh.
But it was a nuisance and it took longer, but it worked.
Uh-huh.
And we used to carry them across the river to Battery Island and do that. Uh-huh. And then we were in St. Augustine, Florida one time, and something happened to the Royal Flush. And it was a prop, because Dallas and I went with him to Jacksonville, Phoenix Avenue, where it was the largest prop manufacturing place in the country, I think. I never saw. They had props as big as this house.
Wow.
That fit. Wow. I just was stunned when I went in there the first time and saw it. But anyway, we got permission from the city of Fernandina Beach. Fernandina is not just Fernandina. It's Fernandina Beach is the correct proper name for that town. And we got permission from them to put our boat, the Royal Flush, up on Fort Clinch, which was a state park. Uh-huh. It was a park. And they charged admission to go on there. However, we had a free pass. I don't know how we got it, but we did. But anyway, I'm not sure that the city of Fernandina Beach had the privilege of being able to give us the right, but somebody did. We did it legally.
Yeah.
But what tickles me is the paper came out the next morning, and it said, boat in distress on Fort Clinch, and they had the greatest mixed-up affair, long thing on the front page of that paper. Everybody went tearing to Fort Clinch to see this abandoned boat. And I thought, my God, it's a Royal Flush, and we're there legally. And Dallas, went to Jacksonville, got the prop, and came back. Uh-huh. And on the right tide, we changed the prop. And
that's great.
I went right everywhere he went. I went right along with him, he and all the other men. I have heard every kind of language known to man.
I bet you.
But I never resented any of it. They did not mean anything, no disrespect to me. It was just their way. I have got a poem written about the words of a fisherman.
I bet you do.
And I said, forgive them.
And
it's
what,
just normal.
What was life like for a woman on a boat?
I didn't go on the boats.
Oh, you didn't? That
Mm-mm.
was just around the boats.
I was around the boats.
So when you went to Florida,
didn't run the boats either.
Okay.
The first time I ever saw him running one of our boats was bringing it back from Willis's up here where we had put it. He and Stanley O'Neill, we had two boats, had one to take it up, then one to bring it back, and all that business. And I had gone up in the car, but I came back and I went down to the fish house, this one over here that we had built after Hazel. We started it before Hazel, but what we had, we lost.
Right.
And we lost a whole shrimp house and part of another one, I put it that way. But when I got down there on that dock, I was waiting. And I got to thinking, well, now Stanley's on the Royal Flush, but who's going to bring the Lila H in? That was the thing for me. She was the one that they had to put up on the hill. I thought, I wonder who they got to do that. And I saw it coming. And I looked in the wheelhouse, and it was Dallas. And I said, oh, my God, he doesn't know how to run that boat. And Stanley got tied up, and he got on the dock real fast, and he hollered orders to Dallas of what to do, because Dallas really did not know nothing. We always had pleasure boats,
sure.
And he was great. I mean, he knew exactly. And but a shrimp boat, he just never had. People find that odd, that all of our lives we were involved in these huge shrimp trawlers, and he didn't know how to run one.
So y'all, what would y'all do? Y'all would drive the trucks down to Florida? You said that y'all went down to Florida a lot.
Yeah, we went in our cars. We went in a car.
And the boats would work their way.
The boats would be out. We followed them down. They'd be out in the ocean going down. And we had a radio in our car. This is in latter days now, when things got better, equipment got better.
Yeah.
We could talk, Dallas could talk to them from the car. Not always, but if the conditions were right, we could talk to them. And
why did everything about the shrimp business seem, why does Florida keep coming up so much?
There was you might start with from Southport, we would we go to Georgetown for a long time. We went every year, and we'd get an apartment or maybe just a room.
Uh-huh.
And we fished out of one particular. We had became very friendly with one of the shrimp dealers down there, and we put our shrimp out with him. And then we stopped going to Georgetown. I don't know why. I really don't know. Now, you're talking about stink, but that International Paper Company doesn't smell good either.
It's still like that, too. It's still like that.
I know. And we once in a while, we would smell the one up here at Regalwood.
Yeah.
And that's just before you get to Wilmington. So I'm used to these terrible odors, even shrimp heads on the beach that stayed overnight in 95 degree weather. That doesn't smell good either.
Okay.
But then we started going, and we wouldn't stop until we got to Fernandina Beach, Florida.
Wow.
We stopped. And, of course, we knew a lot of people down there, and a place to tie up and a place to put the shrimp out. And we would get an apartment, either on the beach or into the city.
Uh-huh.
Most of the time, we went on over to the beach. It was pleasanter over there.
So it was almost like Southport had these sister panels or something.
Fernandina Beach is a lovely place to go. That's a lovely town. Uh-huh. It's not as pretty as Southport, but it's just a nice town.
Yeah.
And of course, Lewis Hardy was from there, so
okay.
I knew all of his relatives, so I had no problem of having somewhere to go and talk to somebody that I knew. But Dorothy was usually around too. And she still is. Her husband died a couple of years ago. She still goes and is very close with his family down there. But we would leave Fernandina Beach. We would go next to, I think, St. Augustine.
Uh-huh.
That's 40 miles from Jacksonville. And Fernandina Beach is only about 20 miles north of there.
Uh-huh.
But the next stop would be St. Augustine, and I loved that.
Uh-huh.
That is my favorite town.
That's
out of
nice
South.
Town.
If ever I had to leave Southport and had my choice, I would choose St. Augustine, Florida.
Wow.
It is a gorgeous place.
I like it too.
Perfectly beautiful and the friendliest place.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know what it's like today, but then it was just, I loved it.
Uh-huh.
And we usually got an apartment on the beach there, St. Augustine Beach. And we like to go swimming, and we like to ski. Of course, we couldn't always ski because it was a matter of getting skis and a boat.
Right.
So, but we skied a lot up here. We didn't learn to ski till we were in our 40s and lived on them.
How about that?
For long, long years. But then after St. Augustine was New Smyrna. We stopped there. And from New Smyrna, we'd head for Key West.
Wow.
And from here to Key West, Florida, is another 1,000 miles. That's odd that there's 1,000 miles from Southport to Key West. It's 1,000 miles from Southport to Morgan City, Louisiana.
Do you stop at Key West? Was that the end of it?
Uh-uh. Yeah, that's the end of it, because that's the end of the United States.
Well, but you didn't keep going to the Gulf Coast.
No.
Okay.
Our boats went very close,
uh-huh.
and but when we got to Key West, we would leave Southport the day after Christmas. I was packed, and our bags would be right there at that door, and I would have to take the Christmas tree down Christmas Eve, Christmas night, throw that away, and we'd wait until the next morning, get up about 4 o'clock, and take off.
Wow. How many boats did y'all have at the most?
Well, 5.
Wow. And is there a way to describe how much shrimp y'all dealt with? I mean, was there
All I can tell you is that varied considerably. But I remember one year that we had one of our boats run by Jake Stidham, one of the best fishermen we ever had, best captains we ever had. He caught 900 boxes of shrimp in one year.
Wow.
That one boat.
Wow.
And that was when we were going to Key West. Now, they were very abundant in Key West. That was pink gold shrimp.
Wow.
And, but they could not, for those shrimp, you could not fish in the daytime. Right. You had to fish at night. So they slept in the daytime and fished at night.
So you were on the road from Christmas till when? When'd you get home?
Well, it depended on how long we would stay. No, or you won't know how long before I came back home.
Uh-huh.
Well, I started itching in the latter part of March because I loved Southport in April.
Yeah.
I had read a book long years before, and I think I still have it out there in the garage somewhere, called Oh, to Be in England Now That April's There.
Yeah. And you felt that way about Southport.
And I said that, kept saying, Oh, to be in Southport now that April's there. I called it green up time.
Uh-huh.
I said, I can just imagine what it looks like. Everything's
right.
Turning green. The magnolias are blooming. And there's a magnolia tree right there. And
uh-huh.
I just long to be home.
Sure.
I never will get over how badly I hated to leave Southport. It broke my heart every time I ever left it.
And would you get home in April?
And you know, no, I did not. Not always. It sometimes was as much as May, and I think one year as far as June.
Wow.
It just depended on the shrimp,
wow.
how much we were doing. And, of course, everybody wanted to come home. And I hate to talk about it being so disagreeable in Key West. Key West is really a perfectly beautiful place. That ocean overseas highway from Homestead below Miami to Key West is absolutely the most beautiful thing you have ever seen. There has never been a picture that would equal what your eye could see.
Yeah, I've never seen it.
If you ever go to Miami, don't you dare not go to Key West, spend one night, and come right straight back home. Don't stay. I give you my word of honor, it's the vilest town that I have ever seen, that God put breath in my life.
And it was vile way back.
Oh.
It was just always a...
And it's even worse now.
Yeah, I've heard.
The people that go down there now say, Lily, you don't even want to go back. My daughter wants to go back real bad, and I keep trying to put her off, you know.
So did you have children with you at this time?
No, yes.
So you had, how many children did you have?
I didn't have but one, and she was adopted.
Uh-huh.
I could not have children.
So
when I was about 35 or 36, I've forgotten when. That's another little story. We were sitting over there on that house on the corner, Alice St. George's and Harold's front porch. All the neighbors and everybody, the women gathered over there most every morning, and we'd sit on her porch. And she had Coca-Colas, and we'd sit there. This was June the 23rd. We were sitting there. And Grace Ruark, who taught me in the sixth grade, and who had married an attorney here and stayed, she was Grace Pridgen when she taught me. And she taught Dallas, too, as a matter of fact. And she came by. And it was so hot. It was like it is now.
Yeah.
You couldn't catch your breath. It was so hot.
Yeah.
And she kind of pulled in and had the window down. Of course, we didn't have air conditioning then, not even in cars nor your house.
Right.
And we said, Grace, get out and come in. Alice said, come on, I'm going in to get you a Coke. So she came in and she sat down. And she said, oh, I've got the worst job today. We said, what? But now, she worked for the welfare department, and her job was foster children. And she said, well, she said, I've got to find a home for six children.
Wow.
She said, I got one for you, I got one for you, I got one for you. And she went around there. And we all said, what are you talking about? She said, I'm talking about I need foster homes for these children. And I've got to do it today. I've got to do something about it. She said, they're in homes, but they've got to be moved for various reasons. And so we talked about it, and Augusta and I talked a little bit. I said, you know, I'm going to tell Dallas about that. And she said, well, I'm going to talk to Merritt. Well, now, she had three children. She said, I'm going to talk to Merritt about it. And Alice said, Well, I think I'm going to talk to Harold about it, because Alice, as I told you, now, she had taught me in school. She taught me in the second grade. And so she was that much older than I was, but we were on the first-name basis by that time, and living as close as we did. So anyway, Augusta called me later on that day, and she said, Mary and I have decided, no, we've got three to educate and bring up. And I talked to Dallas, and he said, well, let's go and talk with Grace. She called her Miss Grace. Miss Grace tonight at her house. And I said, okay. So he was interested. And I talked to Alice, and she said, well, Leela, she said, Harold and I have decided we don't think at our age we better tackle it. And so we went and talked to Grace that night, and she said, do me a favor. Go down to the welfare department this in the morning and talk to Mr. Sexton, who was head of the welfare department. And we did. He brought us out all the papers, the medical records and everything, psychological and everything. And we said, well, we're going down and look at the seven-year-old child, which would have been, if it had been our natural child. He said, look, do me a favor. Look at that baby, the four-year-old girl, little girl. Said, I'd love to see you two have that little girl. He said, I've seen them, and said, she's adorable. And we promised him we would. We came back and went to Alice and Harold and talked them into going with us. They got the back seat, we got in the front. It was the 24th day of June, 47 years this year, because I took the two girls to Wilmington for a big blowout dinner for their anniversary. And we came back with those children, because we went first and saw that little one. And I saw her run into the car.
The four-year-old?
Uh-huh. I said, Dallas, I got to have her. So she climbed in, and we went to the seven-year-old that we had gone out there to look at, really. And Alice and Harold put her in the car.
That's great. That's a nice thing.
And on the 24th of June, we became foster parents.
Wow.
And in a year, by the end of the year, we adopted both children.
That's great.
And they are very, very close.
Oh, that's great.
In fact, Carolyn comes every morning before she goes to work and has breakfast with us. She'll back at night to have supper with her, dinner with us. And her mother and father have died. And Linda's father, my husband, is gone. So she told me when her mother died, she said, Aunt Leela, she said, you know you got to be my mother now. I said, yeah. And I have been.
That's nice.
And we adore her.
So your daughter would go with you down to Florida?
She went with us to Florida until she went 1 year and stayed the whole year because she had not started school.
Okay.
She was four when I adopted her. When I took her as a foster child, when we took her as a foster child. The next year, she was five, so she still couldn't go to school. So we took her to Key West.
Okay.
And I have some of the greatest pictures of her in Key West. And then I guess the next year, she probably started school. And I would not take her out of school, so I didn't take her with us. My mother and father came down and moved in my house. They closed their house up and came down here. And kept Linda and saw that she got to school. And then I would come home, and then I would go to the school and make arrangements with her principal and the teacher to give me work. And I would take her back to Key West and maybe keep her 2 or 3 weeks.
Wow.
And keep up her work. And she made out fine. But I did not take her out of school because I saw what happened to some of the others that did, and it didn't work. I mean, when they got back to Southport and started back to school, it was all different.
Right.
And I didn't think that was a good idea.
So there was a whole bunch of people from Southport.
Oh, yes.
Moving.
Oh, you have no idea how much fun we had. That's what's so funny.
It was like a big
camp. I hated
or
it, but we had a grand time. We all hated it, but we had the best time.
So it was the crews?
There was Dorothy and Lewis. There was Wiley and Vicky, Dallas and me, Bill and Claudia, Wiley and Vicky, Billy and Beulah Jr. Who was that? Who was it?
John, I'm sorry, Layla.
Huh?
I'm sorry, Layla. I didn't know.
Was it John?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
That's okay. Do you need anything?
No, ma'am.
And Charlie and Ella Lee and I don't know how many. And so then there was some from Carteret County that we knew, that Dallas and I knew, that we introduced to them. Wow. And then there was Joe and Ed Lee Thompson in Wilmington that his brother lives right across the street from up here. But they lived in Wilmington. And so there was a colony of us.
I'll say.
And we went out every night we could and hit every bar.
I bet you did.
And I think one time we went down Duval Street just for the heck of it and counted the bars. And I think we came up with something like 157. From one end of Key West down to South Beach.
Ooh.
In just one street. Now, Duval Street is the main street.
Now, was this just boat owners? The business
these
owners?
These are boat owners.
And then the
fleet
crew,
owners.
And then the crews.
Oh, yeah, some of them were crews.
The crews would live on the boat?
Yeah, some of no, yeah.
Most of
if
them?
If they didn't have their family with them, they stayed on the boat. And very few of the men carried their families on the boats.
I bet it was wild.
And, it was wild. And I don't guess there's a bar anywhere there, or Boca Chica, which was a naval base, that we didn't hit.
Wow.
We had a wonderful time. And then we had our houses, the apartments that we had, we met there.
And y'all would try to stay near each other, or not really?
Have what?
Now, would y'all stay near each other, or not really?
No, that was a bad part, because when we got there, there's a hotel downtown on